You ready to talk about blessings? Anybody ever receive a blessing from their parent? What was the occasion?
At our rehearsal dinner.
Perfect. Because you're lit up like a Christmas tree. Like, this is, all senses are on. That's a fabulous time to do it. All right, anybody ever seen Born Identity? The first one. Okay, and you know they're making a fourth one with him, not some stranger. So, yeah, my girls are pretty, they still think he's, you know, 29 or something. I'm like, babe, he's almost as old as I. No, stop, Dad. He's, so, whatever. Okay, so Born Identity. He goes onto a boat. He's got a mission. He's going to kill this guy. He gets shot. He wakes up floating in water, and he doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know where he's been. He doesn't know what he's got. He's looking as they pull off the equipment. He's looking at it. I got nothing. He's the classic amnesia scenario. What is a guy who doesn't know what he's about, what he's for, what he can even do? What does that guy do? I don't know. There was a good chance. Now, I think they did also find the thing under his skin. Now, if they had not found that, because, like, this is crazy. If they hadn't found that, he could very possibly have spent the rest of his life as a fisherman on that boat. He would have been good at it. Nobody would ever have seen him again. Nobody would. If you don't know who you are liable to be, and that wouldn't have been a horrible thing, attached to, sucked into, caught by anything, because you don't know, no, I'm not this guy. I am not a fisherman. I am a this, so I need to pursue this. If you don't know that, you can be captured by virtually anything if you don't know who you are and what you're for. And I would suggest we have a culture that creates that kind of person. Our culture is bent on creating those kinds of, certainly kids. And kids who don't know who they are or what they're for, there is a gravitational pull towards seeking pleasure. Why am I here? To feel good. When I feel good, I like that. And I like, it's not been enough. I need to do that more. And so their purpose now becomes to feel good, to take care of themselves. And when it crosses a certain line, they become a clinical narcissist. So somebody who doesn't know who they are and what they're for is liable to be captured by mediocre things, by foreign things that are not terrible, or by horrible things. And that's just if it's a neutral playing field. But what if it's not a neutral playing field? What if there is an enemy out there who's lurking around hoping to find kids who don't know who they are or what they're about, and he's not going to allow them to just stumble about. He's going to tell them, your purpose is, it could be pleasure, it could be fame, it could be, and he is actively trying to program our kids for their purpose. And if that's all they've received, it is a logical conclusion to think that they will receive that. If they've only gotten a certain set of instructions, they are going to follow the only instructions they've had. And so we cannot just sit still. We can't just hope for the best. We have to be active, and we have to be doing things that, frankly, our culture doesn't even value. And not because it doesn't work, and not because for the lack of it we're suffering. We've lost it. We have forgotten who we are. And as Christians, we have kind of a cultural amnesia. And we sort of think our kids are going to figure it out by themselves, because we sort of did, well, not really, ourselves. It's a mess. So I would propose we do not let our kids wander around and figure out what their own purpose is. We have to tell them what that is in a way that they will actually receive it. And a blessing is a fantastic way to do that. Just to underscore, John 8:44 tells us about Satan. And this is, he is not after us to keep us from succeeding. He's not after us to keep us from becoming missionaries. He wants to deceive and to destroy. And primarily he destroys by deception. So none of us need to have our heads spin around and, you know, vomit pea soup or levitate or anything. It's just completely unnecessary. If he can deceive us, he's won. So we can fight that deception. And we've been given gifts to do that with. And that's and the blessing is a very powerful and ancient thing that God has given to us. A spiritual blessing, technically, is to want good for another. A biblical spiritual blessing is to want good for another in God's kingdom. And I could go off for hours at a time on all the rabbit trails that I'm tempted to going through this. But if you want someone's good because that will help me, that's about me. And it's very difficult to root that out. I want a chiropractor in the family. That would be great for me. And I think it would be great for you too, son. So let's do that. Dad, I'm 5. I know, but let's limber up. And this is a spine. And you want the best for him, but that's not for him. That's for you. And it's very difficult. And I'm asking a lot for us to peel back the stuff that we want for our kids. But if we want good for our kids in the kingdom of God, you don't know what those good things are. That's God's deal. I don't know what my kid's going to grow up and do for a living. And for me to target that would be self-centered. It actually would be foolish. I have an uncle who, when he was little, and I think it was one of those things where they thought they were done having kids, and they had one more kid, and she's like, oh, what a blessing. You were given to us so that you would grow up and be a pastor. And he heard this when he was like a toddler. And, you know, his name was Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave, but he should not have ever been a pastor. He was constitutionally not suited for that. And he did it for a while, and then he didn't do it, and then he kind of went, because he felt like, but that's what I'm here for. And it didn't feel right, but he had to, you know, now I'm not doing what God told me. Well, I don't think God told him that. I think his mom told him that. And I think it made her feel all warm and fuzzy, you know, that I gave birth to a, you know, spiritual leader or whatever. So as you're thinking about this blessing stuff, I would suggest that you not telegraph to your kids the career that you have in mind for them as a blessing. Because they may be horrible at that. You know, I was this close to playing in the NBA, but I was slow, short, and didn't play basketball. But if I felt like that was my God-given purpose, I am now suffering a lifetime of confusion. I am never going to be where I'm supposed to be because I can't get into that club. And so in the kingdom of God, you have to let God take control of the kingdom. So that's very important in this blessing. Now, you can bless someone because you just want good for them. I hope everything turns out for you. That's a blessing of sorts. And you can pray a prayer of blessing over someone, and now you're kind of speaking on behalf of God, And if you're using kind of God words, that's very good. You can do that in the name of God and say not God words and do all kinds of damage, like my uncle. So we want to do this carefully and precisely and not inject ourselves and our wants and needs into this process, because then it's not a blessing. It's a demand, and it borders on a curse. And I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay. A spiritual blessing is to want good for another in God's kingdom. Now, in the Old Testament, you know, you've all read and you've all seen there's a bunch of movies coming out suddenly about the Bible. I guess it's Easter time. And Abraham and Joseph blessing his children and telling them their futures. And that's where, you know, we're tempted to, I think you're going to be a doctor because I want to live with you when I get really old, and I want to live in a nice place. And there was and we don't have time for it right now, but there was a reason why God was telling these guys the future of their children, which was because they were in the line of Christ. So that's done. So, I mean, God can do whatever he wants, and if God tells you the future for your kids, I'm out. You know, you do what you're told. But I'm just saying, don't wait around thinking it's common. And if you try hard enough, God will tell you what the future of your child is, like they did in the Old Testament. It's a different deal. That strategy was completed. So that's not for us. But there is a bunch of stuff for us. And I want to hit those high points today. A spiritual, and I mean biblical. I think I don't need to overburden you with words, but just when you hear blessing today, it's biblical spiritual blessing. A spiritual blessing for a child can be a gift of identity, purpose, and recognition of uniqueness on behalf of God. I can tell you, I think you rock. Now, that's a personal blessing, but I'm not invoking God in that. When I'm invoking God, there's more gravitas to it, obviously. And I'm engaging the spiritual realm in this. And God actually wants us to do that. And in the economy of heaven, there's no shortage of blessings. There's not a like, oh, you've used too much, and you've got to slow down now. The storeroom is endless. You cannot run out. There's no fear that this has to stop one day. And I would suggest that everybody, including everyone in this room, is walking around suffering because they are dealing with their identity, their purpose, and they doubt their uniqueness in God's eyes. And that can be dealt with spiritually and in the name of God. Let's go through those individually. 1 Peter 2:9. This blessing stuff seems like pastor junk. I mean, what do you have to do to get a blessing card? Because you just can't have, like, people run around willy-nilly. Oh, nay, nay. Yes, you can. Now, he's talking, this is Jesus here, but you, the believers, and he's talking to and about the Pharisees who are within earshot, but you are not like that. You, believers, New Testament believers, you are a chosen people. You are our royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light. Y'all are priests. You all have access to stuff in heaven. And you all can go around and give this stuff out to people. But we have been thoroughly deceived into believing, well, maybe if I had done this or gone to that place, or if I had not done this stuff, maybe that, You are, as a believer, a priest. You have access to holy things. You are supposed to be dispensing holy things. And mostly we don't, because we don't feel adequate or whatever. Stop it. Just stop it. You have access to the storehouses of heaven for the kingdom of God, not just for anything. So that's a defining factor. So for our kids, when we tell them, you know, I want to help you know who you are and what you're about, not chiropractor. That's a job. That's a career path. Who you are, son, daughter, you are part of a holy nation. And with that comes responsibilities as well as benefits. But you are a part of something way beyond your understanding. You have access to things. You have the ability to say things on behalf of God. And you want to make sure those are true. But you are a member of a holy priesthood. So as you go and grow and are off and you're out of my sight as a parent and you start making your own decisions, if they have adopted that in any fashion, if they go and run wild, the whole time they're running wild, they're going to know, this is so not me. I am being an idiot. But this is not me. I'm doing stupid stuff. Because I was raised to know that I am here as a part of a holy nation. I have responsibilities to fulfill. I may not know what those are yet. So if I am running wild and doing all kinds of crazy, I want them to know that they're being crazy. I don't want them to think that's normal. And a bunch of kids are running around today being crazy, and they think it's absolutely normal. There's no shame. There's no, boy, when I stop this, I just got to figure out how to do this better. They don't see this as a bad patch, because that's who they are. There's been a diagnosis for narcissism, and it was a fairly lengthy questionnaire, and when therapists were talking to potential narcissists, the narcissists got bored, and they didn't want to finish the diagnostic test because they were narcissists. So they came up with a completely different diagnostic that was as accurate, and it was one question. Are you a narcissist? Yes, I am. And it was as accurate as the long form. So y'all know narcissists. I would like the narcissists in my life to know that they are misbehaving. I would like to know that their stuff is bad and that when they knock it off, there's going to be help for them. But this is wrong, bad, and destructive. And if they have been so deceived that they don't know that stuff, it's like their whole body is numb and they're bleeding out and they don't know and they don't care. So if we could get a child to feel like I am part of something holy. Now, we all want our kids to feel special and unique, and we do all kinds of things for that purpose. But that's a lot of that stuff is not kingdom stuff. A lot of that stuff is because in our economy, there is not an endless supply of specialness. In our culture, I'm only special because you're less special. How do you know if you're a good athlete? You're better than those guys. I mean, it's a scarcity thing. It's an economic model. We only know who we are in our world by virtue of what other people don't have. And so we're tempted to grab stuff that's not ours to be unique and to be special at the expense of other people. And narcissists do that all the time because their purpose is to get on top and stay there because they're going to die if they don't. But in the economy of the kingdom of God, there's no shortage of blessing. I can bless you and I'm not out. I can bless you and this guy's not going to fall short of a blessing. It's a crazy maker. But if you're a people of priests, it's like you're in another dimension and the rules work differently. And I would alter that image. We are those people who have been convinced we're in the, oh gosh, sorry, Christine, I'm going to do another movie reference, in the Matrix. We are this. We have been told we're this, and we have accepted this. And when somebody starts to realize that they're actually this, everybody freaks. And sometimes this person is tempted to go back because they don't even know what to do because they've not had anybody tell them, okay, if I'm this unique, what do I do? And you can harm all kinds of people being that unique if you don't have guidance, if you're not told what it's for. So if you're a unique, holy person, you need somebody to tell you what to do with all of that, or you're going to go out and do all kinds of damage. And that's the next thing. Purpose. In children's ministry and in family ministry now, the thing that I can't even escape if I wanted to, is Deuteronomy 6. What is our purpose? In a nutshell, and this will not impress your children in the least, so I suggest you don't go home and give it to them and think you're done. Do you know what it says, Deuteronomy 6, the Shema? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. You might have heard that all your life. It's shocking. This is the first time the nation of Israel heard anything of the kind, and it was virtually, well, it was God speaking through Moses. And they could all legitimately be sitting around going, okay, there's this God. I mean, we know. We see fire and thunder and all this stuff. But what does he want from us? Well, I'm a recovering Baptist. So my assumption is he wants really good behavior. And so that's got to be number one. I can't do anything else until I get my behavior in line. And I grew up in Southern California and spent a lot of time at Disneyland, and they had the little cutouts of the little, like the Keystone Cop kind of guy, and you have to be this tall to ride this ride. You guys ever see anything like that? Satan has told us you have to be this good to access God. And if I'm this good, it's not God's fault. I'm not upset with God in the least. It's my fault. I just got to get myself here, and then I think the Bible will start making sense. That's a lie from the pit of hell. I'm here, I ought not be here, but I can't claw my way out. But I am, as a believer, a holy priest, and I have access to the power of heaven to take care of stuff for me that I can't take care of by myself. That's the way it's supposed to work. But Satan says, no, 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 you're on your own. Get yourself squeaky clean, and then God will be interested in you. Because basically you're a wretch, which is not untrue. So this deception is really well thought out. You are a wretch. I hope you know that. And you all are, like, pretty whacked. You're all kind of crazy. And you know, you think I'm not talking about you, but I am. We're partial people. Our common sense is damaged. We believe all kinds of stuff because, well, we were born that way, but we've also absorbed a lot of this deception. And it's mixed in with a bunch of biblical truth if you've been around church for very long, and they look the same. How do I separate the two? I don't know what's the lie and what's true, and I'm operating on all of it like it's true because it's in my head. Well, we need help with this. We need help pulling that apart. So what are you here for? I had a guy recently ask me that question. And my first thought was, you didn't come up with this question on your own. God had you ask that question. Now, if somebody else comes up and says, what's your purpose? And if you've been in the membership class, Pastor Les does that. And it gets me fired up every time I'm in there. I instantly want to start preaching. Because nobody, it's a man on the street thing. What's your purpose? And some of them just outright have a good time. I mean, it's just like they got nothing and they're going to at least cling to their pride. I don't know. They're just, they don't know. It's a huge question. And most people walking around spiritually like zombies, and they're not even asking the question. What am I here for? It's a legitimate question that we should have an answer for. And the answer is, you are supposed to love the Lord your God with all, not behave well. It's what you love most. Because if what you love will make 1,000 decisions for you every day. If I love drinking, but I know I'm supposed to be good, I'll be good when I have to or when people are watching, but when I'm tired, when I'm, you know, in A circles, if I'm halt, if I'm hungry, angry, lonely, tired, probably I'm going to do this thing that I love. I'm going to be pulled to what I love. When I don't know what to do, I'm going to go to what I love. So God says, let's fix what you love. Have you ever tried to change what you love? I think I'm going to love classical music today. And you go home and you like you just slam in that Bee Gees. You know, like, I got to purge my soul now. I got to... You can't really do that. But there are other things you can do to change what you love. And we have the Holy Spirit. If you don't love God with all your heart, you ought to. And you can. And a great prayer is, and Teresa of Avila, 15th century, I think, nun. All right, she's already, like, she's card-carrying none. She wrote this prayer, God, I don't love you. I don't even want to love you. But I want to love you. Bam. Does that sound like something in the Bible, you know? I believe, help my disbelief. God is all, yes, I will do that for you. Yes, I will change what you love. It'll take some time and it'll take some effort on your part, but absolutely. God wants your love to be changed. And he will do that as you offer yourself up to him, because that's what priests do. So our purpose is to love God, and then everything else starts to make sense, like the Bible. Because if you think your purpose is to behave well, there's a bunch of stuff in the Bible that was put there to make you go crazy. Like every Bible story in the Old Testament. These guys are jerks. They're criminals. And they don't apologize. And the story ends. I mean, we don't do that with the flannel graphs. You know, the Noah flannel graph stops when they get off the ark. You have to buy the other one where he's naked and drunk, you know, and it's just, it's pretty expensive. It's in there on purpose. Behavior is not your purpose. Behavior is a result of what you love. What you love has been jacked up. Let's fix that. And it's a completely spiritual thing. Not completely. It's a 99% spiritual thing. If you don't step up to offer yourself, to surrender to God and offer yourself up to this process, it's not going to happen. You don't make a seed grow, but if you don't plant it and water it, it's not going to grow. We have our responsibility. We just don't actually do the stuff. So we have to offer ourselves up properly. So our purpose, and I've rounded this off for kids because that whole love the Lord your God, so particularly like fourth, fifth grade on up, I'm telling kids, boys and girls, your purpose is to rescue and protect. You're not here for you. Knock it off. You're here to rescue and protect. And the more I think about that, the more I can't think of a situation that doesn't apply. And we all know men who are 35 going on 14, and they live for their own pleasure. They have families, and they have children, and they have jobs, and they live for themselves. and they've not been told otherwise. So when they get told, no, you're not supposed to be grabbing every good thing for yourself and hope everybody does the same, and if they do it well, then everybody will be. You're supposed to rescue your family and protect them. And if you can buy into that, and little boys are like, rescue and protect? Do I get a shield? What's my logo going to be? You know, and sure, have at it. It's innate. Something in their soul says, of course you're supposed to be out there taking care of people. But part of the deception is, no, it's you. Just take care of you. They'll take care of them, and everybody will be happy, which is, that's a disastrous lie. I don't think anybody actually even believes that. I'm just taking care of me, and if they fail at taking care of them, sorry. But I'm going to take their stuff when they're not looking. As a believer, you walk around to rescue and to protect. And it's pretty simple, and it gets me out of myself. And if I'm buying into that, sacrifice is not such a bad word. It's like an obvious word. It's like oxygen. If I'm here to rescue and protect, I'm going to take hits. And the second level is you're going to take hits from the people that you're trying to rescue and protect. Don't be surprised. And when you get those hits, you're like, they told me this would happen. I guess I'm doing it right. But if nobody's ever told you that, you're going to try to do a good thing, and you're going to get attacked by the person you're trying to save, and you're like, I'm out. This does not make me feel good. That narcissist thing. We're here to love God, and in Matthew and in Luke, Jesus says, and to love others. What you love is primary. And the stuff we love is all jacked up, and it needs to get straightened out. So that's the purpose. Our uniqueness. Matthew 3:17. Jesus was being baptized, which completely confused John. Because John was baptizing sinners. If you wanted to stop sinning as much as you'd been sinning, you would go to John. And he would say, okay, well, let's get you in the river, and I'll baptize you, and then you will, probably not sin until you get out of the water. But he was baptizing sinners. That's what he was doing. And Jesus comes along and he says, I need you to baptize me. And he rightly freaks out. I'm not sure what version that says that, but it's in there. He says, I can't. You're not a sinner. Well, that would be horrible. And Jesus just says, baptize me. And when God says just anything, you do it. And you figure it out later, because God does that all the time. Just do what I've asked. So he's baptized. Now this is the Son of God. He remembers eternity past. He knows the face of God looks like. He's heard the angels sing. This is the Son of God who knows his purpose like nobody else. And he's baptized and he comes out of the water, and do you know what happens? His Father blesses him. His Father, and a voice from heaven, 3:17, said, this is my dearly loved Son who brings me great joy. Who was that said for? All the people standing around? I don't know what that felt like. Around, if it was thunder, I don't know if they understood the word. I don't know what. Who cares? It's not you. It's not for you guys. Something big just happened, and I think Jesus just stood there and cried. And it wasn't because it was information he didn't previously have. Did he know that his Father loved him? Does a kid who knows that he's loved needs to be told that he's loved? Of course he does. Because we occasionally have amnesia. and we forget who we are and what we're for. If Jesus, I would just presuppose, if Jesus needed to receive a blessing, you all need a blessing. And your kids all need a blessing. And it would feed their souls. Talk about uniqueness. For God to say, you are special, and I love you. Now, we are priests. There are words we get to speak on behalf of God. And those are words we can use. Because this deception, this kind of disease of deception that we walk around with, we walk around with a pretty strong belief that we're not unique, that we're not special, and we have no purpose. And if you're in a room with 5,000 people and somebody says, you know, y'all are really special and y'all have a great purpose, and get to Luby's before the Methodists or whatever, you know. It's good to hear and it's worth saying, but I'm not feeling it. It was just kind of it's what you do after the sermon's over while you're looking for your car keys. But it can be so much more than that. And I think better, smaller. In the last few years, everything I can think of spiritually, it's done better, smaller. So a blessing to somebody, from somebody that they know and can touch and can smell their breath and to hear, I love you. God loves you. And he's got great plans for you, and I don't know what they are. It's like they were previously flatlined, and then bloop. And it might be flat for a lot, that they might need more. Because we all believe, I'm kind of horrible, I'm kind of stupid, I'm kind of thick, and God doesn't. He might have loved me when I was little, but after that one event, you need somebody to come to you and tell you the truth. And it can come in the form of a blessing. Should come in the form of a blessing. Physical achievements. Celebrate them. Absolutely. You know, you won the game. You whatever. You triple kowtow, whatever. I mean, celebrate all that stuff. Just don't call it a blessing. And don't make actually too big a deal out of it. Because if you do something, if you've ever done something like really special, like really cool, you know you're not certain if you could ever do it again. I don't know how I came up with that. I did the thing. And I mean, I worked for years and I did the thing. Do it. I don't. And if it's all on that thing that you did for one moment, and that becomes who you are, this hyper-celebration of the thing that you once did now becomes a curse because you either think you can't do it again or you know you can't do it again. And it turns on you. So celebrate physical achievements. Absolutely. We want our kids to get good grades. You're just not the good grade kid. I'm just thrilled that you got good grades. And let's do it again. But that's not who you are. That's not your purpose. Your purpose is not to get into an Ivy League school. If you can pull that off, I mean, or just go buy some Ivy. You know, it's faster and cheaper. But the purpose thing can get really weird on you. So the physical stuff, don't mix that up with the spiritual stuff. Because if you over-spiritualize a football game, you know, we prayed that we'd win and we won. Don't you think the other team prayed too? What does that mean? I don't know. We prayed better. We prayed louder. You're figuring out how to take credit for this thing that, I mean, somebody was going to win. Somebody was going to lose. And I'm glad you guys won. That's great. But that's not who you are, because one day you're not going to be doing this anymore. Then who are you? And we want kids who know long before that who they are so that they can continue. A curse. I want to talk briefly about what a curse is. Because you can do that hard and long and not know you're doing it. Did you know that? You can bless long and hard and not even be aware that you're doing it. So let's do these things on purpose. A curse. If a blessing was to want good for another in God's kingdom, a curse is to want evil. I want you to fail. Or because it's all about me and I'm angry, Dad, or whatever, and I tell you, you'll never amount to anything. That's really more about me as that angry dad, and I'm just trying to keep him from getting out of my control, I guess. I mean, but that's a curse. I mean, if you were wearing a witch's hat and a cauldron with boiling tongue of newt or what, it couldn't be worse. You will never amount to anything. They already suspect that's true. And now you've given voice to it. And I talk to guys, and occasionally when they're really a mess, I'll ask them, do you hear a word or a sentence repeat through your head over and over and over? And some of them are like, how did you know that? I said, what is it? And often it's, you effing loser. Is it your voice? Is it a demon voice? No, it's not a demon voice. Whose voice is it? Well, it's mine, often. Or it's, they have to think about it. Well, it's kind of my dad's voice, actually. I hadn't thought about it before. How many times a day? Gosh, I don't know. 50? Every time you want to do something or try something, the curse comes back. And eventually you'll convince yourself that I'm not even going to try it anymore because I now believe it. That's what a curse does. There doesn't have to be green mist grabbing you by the throat. And those kinds of words can live on. And it's terrible for a guy to have had that voice of his dad in his head and then the dad die on him. And then there's no, how do we fix this? How do I get him to take it back? How do I get him to tell me that that's not true? And then other men need to step into that. A curse can be a misguidance of purpose, unintentional. Son, you can throw a ball farther than anybody I've ever met. You are the guy. You're the man. And you know one day he's going to throw that arm out, or he'll just graduate from high school and he was king of that hill, but college is a whole different mountain. And now he feels like a loser for the rest of his life. That was not an intentional curse. But at that point, intentional or unintentional, that nuance is sort of lost on the person who has to live with it. Neglect, horrible curse. There are people who would love to have been cursed out loud. That would be preferable than living in a home where I was completely overlooked. Because then that means you are nothing. You don't even rate my anger. You are not worth my getting upset for. And nobody thinks about, I'm going to neglect. I mean, it's kind of a definition of the word. I purposefully neglect you. That's not neglect. Neglect is a horrible curse. A direction toward disaster. What road should I take? Well, we're racing, and I want to win, so I'm going to, and with kooky music, I'm going to get ahead of you and turn the sign. So it's an alligator pit now says, and I'm going to purposefully send you in the wrong direction. People do that. That's a more obvious. But if you've been misdirected in what you're for, what you're not for, I don't know how long you go before you might find somebody who actually, and you probably don't fix this by yourself. You need somebody to say, okay, that was a lie. What? That's not true. There's nothing out there. That's a desert. You go out there, you'll die. You got to stop. You got to turn around, and it's going to cost you about 50 miles in the wrong, and you got to go in the, let me tell you what the right stuff is. Here's a map. Let me show you on the map. I mean, it will take some convincing. But you're not going to get out into the desert, and you're going to be out there. It's going to be too long, too late. Ah, they misdirected me, and now I can't. I don't even know how to get back. And then there's the telling or supporting lies. And all of this stuff can be done by people without knowing that they're doing it, which is what's so scary. So blessings need to come. They need to come powerfully. They need to come in memorable ways, because we're trying to overpower the gates of hell here. And we've been told that's true, that we can. So there's, there's books. Gary Smalley has a great book on called The Blessing. You know, right on the nose there, and that's a great book. There's others. John Trent's got one. And this is a little bit of my formulation, but I'm gonna go through a formal blessing. I'm gonna go through casual blessing. The formal blessing is outside of our culture. You were the only one. Mario was the only one that was blessed formally, and so there's no Jews in this room, no Orthodox Jews. Bar mitzvah, genius. You know when a man knows he's a man? When another man tells him he is, and not before. How would he know? You need somebody to tell you this stuff. A bar mitzvah is a formal, cultural, by the time they can speak, every four-year-old Orthodox Jewish kid has been to some cousin's bar mitzvah. He knows what it looks like, he knows what happens, and he can't wait for his. And surely, probably modern times, it's become, my party was bigger than your party kind of a thing. But it's supposed to be, you are not a man. Son, let's make this clear. You are a boy. But today, and we've trained you for this, today you are a man, and I expect man things out of you. And boy stuff, we're done with that. And they can't wait. That's a fabulous. I'm angry that I'm wasn't raised in a Jewish home to receive that. My next door neighbor Brad did, and he got like hundreds of dollars from his family. Christians, So that is a formal blessing. You can do a blessing. You can do your own bar mitzvah. You're the mommy and the daddy. You can do anything you want. A formal blessing. I would suggest that you organize an event. You invent one. There are milestones that would indicate this is probably time for one of these kinds of things. And those would be great for the kid to know that they're coming. Because the anticipation of the blessing is really important. Because it's like, there's not a surprise blessing. Everybody jumps out. And he goes, blessing! It's best if they know it's coming. My friend did this for his son, and I was so blown away. I was when his son turned 13, it was his sort of a bar mitzvah, Protestant bar mitzvah, and then I in typical fashion in my house, I got around it to when my kid was actually going into high school, and I what is that 15? So I was 2 years late on mine, but you make it up, do it whenever you want. So this is an example. I mean, you can do it then. You can do this at a baptism. What a great milestone to perform a blessing to you. They're already lit up. They've already experienced so much weird stuff that anything. There are tribes that at this manhood stuff, they take the boy, they like grab him from the women. And the women like, oh, and there's like a tug of war. And this kid's just freaking out. And the men grab him, and they're all in makeup and war stuff, and they take him out into the woods. And as soon as they get around the corner, the women are like, ah, did I do it right? Was I convincing? No, Mama, I think you did great. I don't know. I felt like I... It's all a performance for the sake of this kid. He just got dragged off by he doesn't know who until he gets out into the woods, and they don't let him sleep. They don't let him eat. They might alter his body somehow. They might tattoo him. They might pierce an ear, do something, so that when he comes back, he's different. Physically different. can never forget this. So I don't suggest piercing or tattooing your kids. That would, you know, CPS involved or whatever. Organize an event, get a milestone, or make one up because you're overdue. You get to do that. Write out. We do this for baptism here, for the children. I ask the parents, if you want to give a blessing, write it out on a 3x5 card. Anything you can write on that card, you can read to your kid while they're in the tank. They're wearing these crazy culottes like from the Bridge of the Enterprise or something. They're standing in water in front of hundreds of people. Everything is just, their senses are nearly overloaded. And then they hear words of blessing from their parent that are read, best read, because afterwards that card goes to the kid. And I would love to track how often those cards are read over the years. We encourage them to have a box of baptism stuff so they know where it is and they can get back to, I feel crummy about myself. I failed. I need to get that. I love you because you are God's own child. I love you because God gave you to me. And okay, I think I can get back up because I've remembered now who I am. So I would suggest write it out so that they can have it forever. I mean, videotape it for sure, but, you know, who knows how, you know, you make two moves and like, where'd the box of the videotapes go? Bah, I don't know. And write out your blessing and you tell them things God would tell them if he were there. Now that you're 13, son, I am so glad that you will be cleaning your room without being asked. And that... Tell them things that their soul needs that God would tell them if he were there. And because you're a priest, he is and you can. The kinds of things... Well, I'm getting ahead. So you write it out, I would suggest. And this thing, and I got it from my friend, and he got it from the book, The Blessing. And so I did it for my son, and I did it then for my older daughter, and my youngest daughter is coming around the corner, so we'll be doing it for her. And she knows... She was there. She saw it. Looking forward to it. So I invited about 5 or 6 men that had been involved with my son through the junior high. David Ake was there. Shane Withers was there. The men that had poured into him. We invited them. And come with a card. And if you want, come with a token. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And then there was 4 or 5 peers. Guys that he loves. And that are helping him become God's man. Not just the knuckleheads. I mean, they got plenty of influence. They can do their thing later. So we got these 10 males, and, you know, it just seems like there had to be a bucket of wings in the room, so we did that too. And so we did, you know, greasy guy food, and I turned on a video camera, and we had a guy go up and read his card, and a room full of men cry like third grade girls for about an hour and a half. It was a beating. And I would give both kidneys to do it again. These guys came up and I had given them instructions. You know, you could give them a verse, tell them something that's true about them now, or my son, something that's true about him now, or something that you see developing. And encourage that. Because there's stuff that's good and true about you, and you don't know what it is. Certainly that's true for your kids. Buddy, when you stepped up and took responsibility for that, that made me so proud of you. It made me think you're ahead of your time. You're more mature, certainly, than I was at your age. Do you know what's going on? I mean, like, bloop, 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 bloop. His soul is filling up. It's true. I'm not making it up. It's true about him. What I've seen you do today, boys don't do that stuff. That's a man thing. And I'm getting to the man stuff. That's in the next month. Okay, I got to quit talking about man stuff. Tell them stuff that's true about them, stuff spiritually that you see in them. Tell them things that you know priests do and should be doing in the future. Not particularly chiropractic, but I love the way you take care of your friends. I've seen you stand up and fight for what's right. Unbelievable, pal. And you know what? That kid is like, you all probably had a time when you did something and somebody said, are you in choir? Or are you on the, whatever? And you're like, well, no. Why? Well, because you sing like an angel. I had no idea. Or I didn't know I could write. Or I didn't know I could run fast. Or I didn't know. You all need somebody to tell you stuff that you are good at and you don't know it yet. And it could alter your life. Well, you know your kids. And you can watch. I mean, you can be creeping around and watching them. When you're watching them in a game, don't be looking for, do they score or not. But when they took the hit, did they get back up? Did they help the other guy up? Buddy, when you helped the guy up on the other team, my heart grew 3 sizes that day. You know what that kid's going to do for the rest of his life, right? You may never need to repeat that again. It attached to his soul because now he is the guy who takes care of opponents. But he needed somebody to tell him that. So I told everybody coming what this was for, what their role was, and what the point was. They all came educated. They all came to bless my son. Nobody thought they were coming to a buffalo wing party. They knew exactly what they were coming for. It was a rather solemn, fun. I mean, you get so exhausted from the intensity that we all started laughing about stuff. And it was an amazing time. And when my wife did all of that, and I was there on the video camera, same thing. It's overwhelming, really. Meaningful touch. When you look into somebody's eyes and tell them something that's true about them. When you tell them that they are loved and you look into their eyes, it makes it a whole different thing. If you touch them while you're doing it, I mean, get all wacky and put your hand on their head and pray over your children. That's the way they did it in the Old Testament. That's the way they did it in the New Testament. Meaningful touch as an act of blessing is memorable. Tokens on occasion. Not always, not everybody. When we did my son, David Ake, the junior high pastor, brought him a knife. Well, and I had gotten him a knife too. I went to the store and I said, what's the biggest buck knife they make? And it was ridiculous. I mean, it was a short machete. It's not even usable. It's like clean the fish. I don't know what you would, but it was not to be used. It was a token, and I made up stuff about what a knife is for. Men use a knife for this. They use it to protect. They can use it to build. They can use it to provide. I made stuff up, and I gave him the knife while I cried, and while he cried, and we got it on videotape. And at baptism, a Bible with their name on it. There are, at coming of age things, and obviously, I apologize, I'm more guy-centric here, but the men get their boys a bow or an arrow. You are my arrow, and I'm releasing you now. It's more fun if you give them a bow, because then they can go out in the backyard and, go for cats or whatever. But that's what they do. So a token that they can put up on the wall. I got a little plaque from Grandma Tay. And it was Joshua 1:9. And it was like she got it at CVS. I think she got to the end of my Christmas list and I've got $4 left. Talcum powder plaque. I don't know if she got any thought to it at all. It went on my wall. I looked at it every day, every night when I was going to bed. It's part of my soul now. Be strong and be courageous. And who doesn't need to hear that? For the Lord your God is with you, whithersoever thou goest. King James. A token can be really, really powerful. And then a commitment to the one being blessed. This is what I see. This is what I recognize is already a part of you. And I am with you. When you're in trouble, you come to me. I will help you. When you call, I will come. When you're in trouble, we'll fix it together. I mean, you may need to pay me back later, but what? I am here for you. You are not alone. Because part of that deception is you are alone. You are alone in this world. You're alone. You have to take care of you or nobody else will. And this act is, buddy, you are not by yourself. Sweetheart, we will always come for you. I didn't know that before. I suspected, but I wasn't sure. Now it's written in words. You can do this casually. That's the formal stuff. You can do this casually. But the formal stuff, you can do baptism, coming of age, graduation, pre-marriage, at the, you know, in front of your friends. That's a perfect time to do that. You're about to jump into something that you, if you understood what it was, you would be so scared you couldn't eat or drink. But you're not smart enough for that, so we're just going to have the ceremony tomorrow. That's a perfect time. And make up your own. Make up more. I mean, I don't think you should be doing a blessing every weekend because then it just becomes annoying. But casually, a daily prayer of blessing didn't happen in my house growing up. And you know, the problem with my learning all this stuff is I'm learning it as my kids are in, you know, two of them are in college. And I'm like, oh, if I'd have just known this back then, I would, you know. But before you go out of the house, now we did do this, my house growing up and my house now. Nobody leaves the house without somebody saying I love you and somebody saying I love you back. Nobody goes to work. I remember as a kid, I was really mad at my mom and I stormed out of the house to go to third grade and I was about half a block down and I was sick. My soul was sick. I actually snuck back into the house hoping that she didn't know that I left the first time. Love you, Mom. It's just, that's a blessing. You cannot hear that enough. Make it a rule. Nobody goes out the front door until you holler back. I love you, and somebody hollers back. Bedtime. Trust me, that's the worst. In fact, I usually got bedtime duty because my wife was completely exhausted and semi-catatonic. So I often got that duty. What a perfect situation. You're supposed, now, I got in trouble because what's going on up there? And I've got the kids and I'm flipping them both like pizzas, you know, and it's just, you know, it's best not to do that. But if you do it right as a dad, you get them in their bed and every night, We sang a hymn, an old hymn. My wife started this. I mean, like, bring the, this is the hymnal. And they just sang it, you know, three nights in a row, and the kids had it memorized. It's ridiculous. And now they have hymns in their soul. And what do you want to sing tonight? Old Rugged Cross. So, you know, my four-year-old and I are singing the Old Rugged Cross because Mom taught it to her. And you pray, and you know, if you have any life in you at that point, you can tell them stories. And I just, you know, I'm not sure I can climb down the stairs when this is over. I'm so tired. But all right. So there was a guy in the garden and they, you know, they know the story. And so sometimes I would ruin it and they'd get mad at me and fix it. You know, there's a guy in the garden. He was the first man I ever lived and he built a really big boat. Dad! Okay. What a sweet time. They're winding down. It's a forced nose to nose. You could give a casual blessing every day. And your kids will grow up knowing, I got put to bed. And, you know, I got a girl in junior high and everyone, somebody going to come put me to bed? I'm like, you could almost drive. All right, I'm coming. So, and then be on the lookout for spiritual moments that you need to draw attention to. My family didn't do this, but Linda Wiley, when she's driving around and there's a fire or a car crash, all right, who's going to pray? Okay, I will, Mom. And they pray for what's going on as they drive by. Because now you're training on about 13 levels here. I care for other people. I'm not mad that they're slowing me down, which, you know. We care for them. We're praying for them. We're doing something for them because we are here to rescue and protect. And sometimes that means pray. And so you can look for spiritual moments to bless your kids with. To wrap up very quickly, a blessing is to tell them things God would tell them if he were there. Because until they hear it, they don't believe it's true. They have a sneaking suspicion. They pray that it's true. If somebody would just tell me that I'm unique, that I'm loved, that I am able to do holy things, maybe when I grow up or maybe now. I'm unique. Our souls are dying. They're parched for those kinds of words. And you're a nation of priests, and this is supposed to be our job and hobby. So let me bless you. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would incite people today to take up their responsibility and their honor to speak on your behalf. Lord, I pray that they would turn around and they would just pour blessings on their children, formally and casually. And Lord, I pray that it would imprint on these children, and they might not even know the treasure that they've been given until they perhaps have children of their own one day. I pray, Lord, that we would be activated to speak your words for your kingdom purpose. And I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.